This meeting is now being recorded.
Hello, everyone on the line. We are gathering here in Los Angeles, and we'll be with you in just about 2 minutes.
Hi, it's Greg Shatton. I'm on audio only for the moment.
Thanks, Greg. We're gathering here in Los Angeles, and we'll be with the group in a minute.
Sounds good. I'm going to go on mute until such time as a thing to do otherwise.
Bernie will be a few minutes. I would like to remind everyone, if you're not speaking, can you please go on mute? Thank you.
Okay, everybody, Becky Burr here. Thanks for joining us this evening. We've had another full day in L.A. on bylaws drafting. As we discussed yesterday, the focus of our work today is going to be on the CWG questions that were circulated yesterday. When we get through those, we have a couple of issues that we wanted to talk through related to reconsideration. So I am going to start, I think, by turning this over to Sharon. Is that correct, Holly? Sharon, is that who I'm turning this over to for the questions from yesterday? I believe Sharon is on.
Yes, you're turning it over to Sharon.
Okay, I am turning this over to Sharon. Sharon, can you hear me?
I can. Thanks,
all right.
Becky.
Thank you. Very good. Take it away.
Yesterday we went through the list of questions that had come out of the discussion in LA on CWG-related bylaws, and I think the purpose of this part of the call would be to get feedback from CWG or from the coordinating group, rather, as to some of those questions. So is there anyone on the call who is able to speak to feedback on the questions that were discussed last night and circulated on lists last night?
Sharon, we may need to just go through them one by one and ask for reactions.
Okay, but do we have, I guess the threshold question, though, is do we have people on who can respond on this? I'm happy to do that. I don't know do we have the right people on?
Yes, there are some people on. Greg is on, although he's not in the Adobe room. He is on, and others who are on CWG are here also. And Sharon, as I recall, there were some recommendations that the Sidley Adler team had on how to handle some of these, so you might put those forward as well as you're going through them.
Okay. Well, let me go through the questions again, and I'll recap where we were, and then people can respond with their feedback. So the first question, and Brenda has posted it up here in the Adobe chat room. The first question was on, and number one is on whether if you have a matter that coming out of the IFR or special IFR or SCWG that is subject to board approval, if the board adopts the recommendations coming out of those review teams just as they are, is that the end of the process? So if the board accepts all the recommendations, is that the end, or does it still need to go to the empowered community, or does it only go to the empowered community if the board rejects the recommendations? And we had said Sidley had said that we thought separation should be different, and that it seemed in the proposal separation was meant to be different, but that for the other three pieces, IFR, special IFR, SCWG, it's an open question. So any feedback on that first point?
Not
okay.
Seeing anything here, so silence is usually
approval. Okay.
Assent.
Okay. So the recommendation would be that if the board adopts the recommendations in full, that then there is no need to go to the community. However, in the case of a separation, that is a separate empowered community approval. Okay. Number two is on PTI governance. This is not one that we talked about yesterday, so let me just go over it and then ask if there's feedback. The question there relates to the two independent directors of the PTI board and wanted to confirm that the ICANN nominating committee will be used to make that appointment, and then also ask the question of what group is going to be responsible for providing qualification needs to the nominating committee. And then lastly, confirmation that CWG will run a process to identify interim directors to fill those two independent PTI board member spots until the nominating committee process is up and running. Any input on that? Okay. I don't see any hands on that, so I think we just need to skip that one. And number three is on the IANA function contract, and the question that was raised was, if there is an amendment, a material amendment or a waiver to the IANA functions contract that is initiated by ICANN, would the process to approve that amendment, would that reside with a registry slash customer group, or would it reside with the empowered community? As it currently stands, the proposal is silent on this point, and as currently drafted in the bylaws, there would be a public comment period, there would be a CCNSO and a GNSO approval, and then board approval. And we, Sidley, had flagged, should it also not be rejected by the empowered community, and the question is whether that's the right forum or whether it should instead be a registry slash customer group. And we thought that seemed okay if it were a customer group, and I made the point yesterday that that's not dissimilar to where the power resides in the CWG proposal to initiate amendments coming out of the community, because it's the CSC and the IFR who would have the power to recommend amendments. So there's some logic in having one of those groups or both of those groups receive amendments coming from ICANN. Any objections to having that be something that is done by CSC or done by another customer group?
This is Greg, if I could get in the queue. Or if I am the queue, I'll just
You are
speak.
The queue. Yes.
You are the queue. Go.
Okay. Well, I guess it seems to me if I recall correctly, it's been a while, that the idea was that the CCNSO and the GNSO were providing those approvals and that there wasn't a need for another layer, since the CCNSO is by definition, all registries, and the GNSO is, in part, customers. Although that was intended to be the gating factor, and it seems that I don't think adding the empowered community in was intended, nor was it intended that kind of the customers alone, I guess, were going to get their own kind of approval or rejection process. As part of a larger discussion that we had about, what extent is this a multi-stakeholder exercise and to what extent is this a customer exercise? And, we actually, I think, did try to strike balances, and I think this was a balance that was struck in this case. So I don't think there's anything missing.
Thanks, Greg. So, Greg, what I hear you saying is the fact that the current draft bylaws propose that you've got CCNSO and GNSO approving, that that's sufficient and that there is no need to go, and nor was there an intent to go to the empowered community.
Correct. Neither to go larger, not to go larger than that to the empowered community or smaller than that to customers only.
Okay. And I see Cheryl supporting that in the chat room. Okay. If no one objects, then we would strike reference to the empowered community here and instead rely on the references to CCNSO and GNSO. Okay. Good. All right. The next item is CSC number four on the list is currently in the draft bylaws, the CSC charter is subject to amendment by the community. And the request was made by ICANN that the board not have an approval right over amendments to the CSC charter, but have an opportunity to be consulted on those amendments, and we thought that seemed okay. Any objections to that? Okay.
This is Greg again, if I could just chime in. I guess the question is whether this is like a working group, which the board doesn't get to kind of comment on the charter, although I guess I don't think there really is an opportunity for that, or if this is something sui generis where there should be a right of consultation. I think, again, we were thinking of this as being kind of just like a standing working group that was chartered by the community. So I guess, in theory, I don't have a huge problem with a consultation right, and I understand the kind of balance that's being struck by that. But I do, bring that point up that I don't think that was intended. So I just this may be a comment from others if it's put in.
And Andrew raised a question in the chat room, which is, what does consulted mean? A question maybe for Sam or someone else on the ICANN side, is there already a concept of board consultation in the bylaws that could be borrowed for this purpose?
We have a – this is Sam Eisner. There is a process that we use, for example, on the GNSO stakeholder group charters where there's a loop for the board to weigh in. That actually probably is a heavier process than what we'd imagine for changes to the CSC charter. The reason that we raised the CSC charter consultation issue is because the powers of the CSC have the ability to impact ICANN's relationship with PTI, and so we wanted to make sure that changes to the CSC charter that we had an opportunity to view them within ICANN to confirm our understanding that they remain within the or understand how those would impact ICANN and PTI. So, again, going back to the history of having consultations, we do have places where we have the consultation right. We wouldn't recommend that there be a whole place where the ICANN board would have to approve something going out for public comment. So it's a lightweight process, but I think that it would have to just make sure that it gets raised to the level of board consideration and the board not being, fully separate from the process.
Andrew has his hand up. Andrew?
Hi, it's Andrew. So the reason I ask this is because of the point that I think Greg made just at the end of his remarks, which is that this does sound like it sounds precariously close to a substantive change to the proposal, right? That the original thing was that the CSC is chartered in a certain way, and this sounds a little like the board gets to weigh in some way that is short of approving those things. And so I guess given the somewhat high degree of concern about some of the about the feelings, you know, that people seem to have had about the board stepping in some of these processes, I'm just concerned that this could raise some worries. So maybe instead of saying the board has the opportunity to consult, you could just say, the board will be provided the proposed changes for comment, and those comments, you know, may or may not be taken into consideration by whatever the I forget the details of how the amendments are made, but you know, by the people who are making the amendments. That way, you know, consultation sounds remarkably like there's going to be a back and forth with the board, and so the board is going to have some control over how this change happens. And I think that could well raise some eyebrows. That was really what I was concerned about.
Well, Andrew, let me respond. This is Sharon. Let me respond on that and to one of the questions in the chat, which is under the current proposal, how is the CSC charter amended? And it's by a simple majority of each of the CCNSO and GNSO. In looking at it, it also does contemplate a prior public comment period. So it maybe we already have that opportunity. Maybe that is sufficient, what the proposal provides, which is public comment, and that would allow the board to, you know, provide comments during that process.
Yeah, that's a good point. So I actually quite like that because I think that's right. It doesn't change the way that the proposal was put together, and I think that has the nice effect that, you know, the fewer things that we change at this, the less we're likely to run into people saying, you know, we didn't agree to that, we agreed to something else, right? We could really seriously derail this right now, so I'm just trying to be ultra conservative.
Okay, if there are no objections to that approach then, which is just is to leave it with the public comment period, and we could move on. Okay. Hearing none, I'm going to keep going then. So number 5 on the list is the reference to the remedial action plan in the bylaws, and the remedial action plan is still to be drafted, and this is just a mechanical question, it's just confirmation that that plan will be included in the IANA functions contract. So if no objections, we would clarify that in the bylaws. Okay. Number six, now we're moving into questions relating to IFR, and there are a number of questions on this topic. So number six.
Excuse me, this is Akram. I just wanted to go back to the CSC for a second. How do we make sure that the CSC charter does not create a conflict between the PTI, what the PTI can do and what the charter asks them to do? How is that guarded against?
I think it's guarded against by virtue of CCNSO and GNSO needing to approve those amendments, and there would be no incentive to create a conflict. I don't see any conflict. CSC's role relative to PTI is a monitoring role. It's not an operational role.
No, but it gives them the authority to change SLAs and do certain things that will actually end up being in the contract between ICANN and PTI. And if there is a conflict there, how do we settle that conflict?
Yeah, no, CSC doesn't have the power to amend the contract. CSC only can recommend changes. Then it has to go through an approval process. So that's through that approval process is where issues that, you know, create conflicts would be raised.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Okay, so moving on to IFR number six, time frame for the periodic IFRs and the special IFRs. Point was raised yesterday that in the AOC context, there is an articulated one-year time frame for reviews. The CWG proposal refers to periodic IFRs being expected to take 9 months, but there's nothing definitive there. And so the question is whether we can provide for some outside date for the IFR to be completed, whether that would be 9 months or 12 months. And then the other question is whether the special IFR should have a shorter time frame because theoretically it's coming up because there's something that is pressing that can't wait, you know, can't wait for a periodic review. And does that mean it should go faster? So the proposal would be, I think the proposal on periodic IFRs is to put a timeline no longer than 1 year. And any objections to that? Okay. And then on the special IFRs, should those be on a shorter time frame? Can anyone weigh in on that question?
This is Greg, if I could just weigh in quickly. I think the answer is yes, because not only is it addressing an emergent problem, but it's also addressing a specific problem, whereas the periodic IFR is supposed to be a total review. The special IFR, at least potentially, is a review only of the emergent problem.
So, Greg, did you have a recommendation on time frame?
I would say 6 months. Even that feels a little long, but I think given, you know, the multi-stakeholder process, half of the year instead of a whole year is probably a fair place to aim at.
Does anyone have a perspective on that? So the proposal is 6 months for special IFRs, 1 year for periodic IFRs, and those would be outside dates. You know, would take no longer than. Okay, so why don't we go with that? Hearing no objections, we'll go with those time frames, and people can react when they see the next draft. Okay, number seven is a question about the potential for periodic IFRs and special IFRs to to overlap and ensuring that we don't have a situation where we've got two IFRs happening at the same time. And the CWG proposal recognized that possibility and did provide that there could be a delay of a periodic IFR if there was already a special IFR in process. And I think the request is to be more, to be a little clearer on that, to be more specific, and to provide that if a special IFR were in process, that the periodic IFR would be postponed, let's say for a year, so that you don't have resources being used again and again to conduct IFRs that are all happening kind of in the same time frame. So that's one concept. And then the other concept is if there were a periodic IFR happening already on its schedule, and an issue came up that required a special IFR, could the special IFR essentially have priority and take over the periodic IFR? And would it then manage that process and potentially kind of focusing on a particular issue, the particular issue that's created the need for the special IFR? Any thoughts on that? All right. Well, I think on the first piece, the proposal would be that if a special IFR were taking place, that a periodic IFR would occur, no sooner than 1 year following the special IFR, so that there weren't two reviews right on top of the other. And then the second would be that if a need for a special IFR arose while a periodic IFR were ongoing, that the periodic IFR could become a special IFR in order to address the issue being raised in the special IFR.
Jeremy, okay. Martin has raised a question in the chat on this.
Why would we decide this now, as it may depend on the circumstances? I think the reason people were asking this was a point raised by Sam is just, if we don't say anything now, then the process will just take over, and it'll just be automatic that there's a requirement. Let's say there's a special IFR, but the 5 years is up, and there needs to be, under the bylaws, it requires an IFR to occur at least every 5 years, so you'll be constrained. You won't be able to say, oh, we don't need it, we're fine, because the bylaws will require it, so your hands will be tied.
Maybe we should build some discretion into this, because it sounds like we're going from one automatic position to another one. So maybe what you've said, should be put in there, but should be at the, there should be some level of discretion. Because, for instance, a special IFR may only deal with a single topic, and waiting a year for the periodic IFR that's going to address, the whole gamut may not make sense at the time, especially depending on the topic. So I think that these go in the right direction, but I think pinning them down now may remove some flexibility later. So I think we could, kind of split the difference here and have a recommendation that allows for some discretion at the time, but an indication that this is not just a juggernaut either way. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. That seems like a sensible solution. If we're creating discretion, I think it begs the question of whose discretion. And so would this be something that would go, for example, to CCNSO and GNSO to decide whether it's appropriate, whether having a delay is the appropriate outcome? Any thoughts on that?
Well, if they're the ones kind of convening the IFRs, then I think that's yes. That's probably the right place for it to be.
Okay, so let's go with that. We'll go with that there is discretion to delay, and that discretion will reside, rather than just an automatic delay, that the discretion will reside with CCNSO and GNSO. It can be the same it could be the same threshold that's needed to initiate the special IFR, and I think that's supermajority. And then if they decide it's okay to delay, then it would get delayed. Okay. All right,
Sharon, I'm sorry. Just to be mindful, we need to be mindful of time because we have to get through this in our allotted time.
Okay. Number nine, there's a question about clarifying what is meant by oversight structures. So there's a reference in the IFR process of what the IFR is required to review, and it's supposed to review and evaluate the openness and transparency of, quote, oversight structures. And we thought there what that was probably meant to refer to is CSC and the empowered community as it relates to the functioning of the naming services. So if no objections, we wanted to clarify that language. Okay, not seeing any objections, so let's keep going. Number 10 is one of the requirements of the IFR is to evaluate the relative performance of the IANA functions pre- and post-transition according to established service levels. So what that would mean as drafted is that you would always, forever into time, you would always be comparing your current service against the pre-transition, let's say 2016 service period. And the suggestion was that might not make sense going forward. So instead, should the reference point always be to the prior period? And then that means it's got to always be getting better. But you're not referencing back to a period when it may no longer be a relevant period. So that was a question. Now the proposal itself says pre and post transition. So to be literal, that would be referencing the pre-transition 2016 period. But question was whether that really was going to make sense into perpetuity. I see Cheryl saying the prior period makes sense. Any other thoughts on that? Okay, and Andrew says he thinks that was what was intended. Okay, very good. All right, we'll clarify that then. Okay, number 11 is reference to the reports that the IFRT will be reviewing as it's doing its review process, and the language refers to review of the reports provided by PTI on a regular basis and then gives a list of examples. The suggestion was there, rather than trying to hard code examples in the bylaws, instead to reference to the reports required to be delivered under the contract, and we thought that made sense. Any thoughts on that? Okay. The other request was to craft some kind of exception for reports where there is a compelling reason to exclude the report from being made public. For example, there were security issues or government concerns. And then if those reports were held back, they would be presented in redacted form if possible. Any thoughts on that? Okay. Seeing none, I'll keep moving. So number 12, a very technical point, just confirmation that where we refer to not making recommendations in the face of opposition of a GNSO member on a GTLD issue, that really should have referred to opposition of the registry stakeholder group representative on the IFRT, since there technically is no GNSO member, there's these subcategories. So we think that's a clarifying point. Okay, number 13, is also, we think, a clarifying point, that the IFR is allowed to recommend amendments to the SOW, but that doesn't actually say the entire IANA functions contract, and we thought it probably was meant to be the entire contract, not just the SOW, and so we wanted to make that clarification, unless anyone thinks the intention was otherwise. Okay. All right, number 14 is, if there is an amendment to the contract, that the timelines under the proposal, it says the timelines for implementing amendments are agreed to by PTI and the IFRT. The request was that since ICANN is a party to that contract, didn't it make sense that ICANN should also have a say in what those timelines are for the effectiveness of the amendments? So the request was to also refer to ICANN as having a seat at the table for deciding on the time frame. Any concerns with that? Okay. Number 15 is a question about who makes appointments to the IFRT. There's reference in the proposal to the numbers and protocols operational communities, and the request was, can we be more specific on what exactly that means? So I don't know if there's someone on this call who can give us that or if that's something we can get through follow-up. Becky's asking.
I can comment on this, at least for protocol parameters. All appointees from the IETF are to outside organizations are made by the IAB, so this would be the same way. There is no promise, however, that they will in fact appoint this person. That was a thing that the IAB sent several times, that it was not clear that they would want to make such an appointment, and so if there is an appointment, it would come from the IAB, but there's no promise that it will be filled.
Okay. All right, well, we can clarify that. I see Becky's typing, but I'm going to keep going, and I'll come back if there's something still on this point. Becky's asking, John, if you can weigh in on for the numbers community.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Good point. I wanted to make sure my mic was live. For the numbers community, the ASO, which is the NRO, serves all the functions and purposes of the ASO per agreement with ICANN. The NRO would make the determination how appointments were made. In general, we tend to take appointments and ask that the community-elected advisory council do that. That's how ICANN board appointments are made, for example. But on the other hand, because the question hasn't yet been sent to the NRO, I don't know what the process will be for making appointments. I also don't know whether or not the NRO will take the same option of the IAB, which is it may not make one at all. So for purposes of bylaws, it should be identified that appointments will be made by the ASO.
Okay, thank you. Next question, number 16, is should there be a diversity requirement or goal in the IFRT membership? It's currently silent. There is such a requirement for CSC. Anyone have any thoughts on what was intended there? Okay, well, what I would suggest is we can add it into the language since it is in other places, and then if there are any concerns, Andrew's saying he doesn't recall it being discussed. Okay, yeah, so let's put it in. It probably was just something that wasn't discussed and was not intentionally omitted, so we'll add it. Okay, number 17, a question about should we have a clarification of when, at what point in time the IFR team is dissolved. It is not a standing body, which is part of what the proposal provides. It's not a standing body. So should it, you know, after delivery of the final report, should it then dissolve? And that seems like that did seem to make sense to us that there should be some moment in time where it's clear that that body is no longer operating. Okay, so we'll put in language that provides that after delivery of the final report that the team is no longer standing. Another question is whether there would be a quorum requirement on the operation of IFRT. There's nothing in the proposal itself that speaks of quorum requirement, and the group is acting by consensus. So we can just delete reference to quorum. It's not part of the proposal. Do people agree we would just delete reference to a quorum requirement? John, is that an old hand? Okay. No, I don't hear any feedback on that. So we will delete reference to quorum since that was not part of the CWG proposal itself. Okay, number 19 on this list, I think everybody has scrolling function, relates to special IFRs. And that there are two questions there. One is, at the initiation of a special IFR, to clarify that there will be a public comment period. There was some language in the proposal that wasn't entirely clear, and the response back wasn't entirely clear. It references the Empowered Community Mechanism and discussion forum, but we think that really is meant to just refer to a traditional public comment period, so we would clarify that. And number 20 is we have no public comment period relating to recommendations coming out of a special IFR before the board acts. And so, again, the thought was that probably was not intended, so we should add reference to a public comment period in there as well. Okay. All right, so moving on to the last category, SCWG and separation process. There are a handful of questions there. The first question, number 21, relates to when SCWG is running an RFP process. ICANN had suggested that SCWG work within the then existing RFP guidelines that ICANN has. We would clarify that those have to be the ones in place before the SCWG was created, so it wouldn't be that they would just get, it wouldn't be a moving target. It wouldn't be that they were changing kind of while the SCWG was trying to function, but that ICANN felt that that its RFP guidelines are in place to be compliant with laws and for other reasons, and they want to make sure that those guidelines are followed. Any concerns with that? Okay. All right, number 22, there is reference in the CWG proposal that if there are costs associated with SCWG recommendations, that ICANN can't cover those costs by raising fees on the TLD operators. And question or clarification is that that is intended to address the cost of the transition, not the cost of the new operator. So, for example, if a new operator has a different cost structure that just is more expensive, that could be reflected in fees. But the transition cost itself wouldn't be passed through. Does anyone have any thoughts on that or whether that was something that was expressly discussed? Okay, well, why don't we go with that language, and if there are any concerns, people can raise them. I see there's some discussion back on 21 about the RFP guidelines from Jordan saying, you know, but he doesn't know what the guidelines are, and Sam is responding. Sam, I don't know if you want to chime in here.
I'll post a link to the publicly available guidelines. I just had the wrong link. I'll get it in there in a second.
Okay. Great. All right, number 23, I think we've got an answer there. We've got that answer from Andrew and John, so we'll just do the same for 23, which is just 2 points for numbers and protocols. 24, at what point in time is the SCWG team dissolved? We'll do something similar, which is just to clarify when the work is done, the team is dissolved. And then on 25, quorum requirements. The CWG proposal did not impose any quorum requirements, and so we would just delete that and be silent on that point. Okay, so that goes through all of the questions that came up during yesterday's meeting. We still have the punch list that was circulated last Friday. I don't know that we have time. I don't know if the intention, Becky, is to try to go through that as well.
No. I think we need to go to the issues, the questions that we have with respect to the reconsideration request next.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks. And Holly, are you going to lead that discussion?
Yes, happy to.
So we went through the reconsideration request, and we have four issues to raise with you, and we'll be sending you shortly a list of these issues. And this is for, we just want to preview with them with you now, and then for consideration and discussion tomorrow. The first one relates to the timing for the Board Governance Committee to make a recommendation to the board. The proposal included a draft bylaw text that... Hi, is this better? Okay. The proposal included a draft bylaw text that said that the committee's final recommendation to the board shall be made within 90 days of receipt of the request. The draft bylaws that we've been looking at use, instead of the shall be made, uses language of endeavor to produce the final recommendation to the board within 90 days of the receipt of the request. We want to confirm with you that the word endeavor can be included, given that in any case, the board's final decision is required to be made within 135 days of the committee's initial receipt of the request. So there could be some flexibility around that 90-day period. That's the first issue. The second issue is that the proposal contemplates an opportunity for rebuttal of committee recommendations, but there was no description of whether there would be a limit on the length of the rebuttal, and if so, what that limit should be. We would recommend including a limit of, for example, 10 pages double-spaced with a 12-point font, and we know in that regard that the bylaws currently provide that requesters shall not provide more than 25 pages double-spaced and 12-point for the initial argument. So we thought a 10-page rebuttal was reasonable, but we seek your feedback on that. The third issue relates to the proposal that at the option of the requester, recordings and transcripts should be posted of the substantive board discussions around the reconsideration. And given that requiring the posting of such recordings and transcripts could chill the board's full and frank discussion of the request, we wanted to raise with you whether such recordings and transcripts will really be required to be posted. We think from a governance perspective, there is a legitimate concern around how that could chill discussions. I understand that typically the board would consider these kinds of materials to be subject to an attorney-client privilege. So that's another issue to look at. And finally, the fourth issue relates to the scope of permissible requests and whether it should be the Annex 8 currently provides that it should be expanded to include reconciling conflicting and inconsistent expert opinions and expert panel opinions. Now, we know that this issue was discussed at length in our discussions related to the IRP, and ultimately, the CCWG decided that the dispute resolution mechanisms would not be used for this purpose. But that change appeared in the IRP section, but it was not made in the request for reconsideration section. And we recommend and would like authority to make a conforming change to remove it from the reconsideration section. So those are the four issues from our discussion of the reconsideration bylaws today. I think they're relatively straightforward, and we will send this to you in writing very shortly for your consideration so we can discuss tomorrow on our call. Thank you.
Okay, that's our list of issues to discuss. We also did, just to bring you up to speed, get through the mission statement. A revised look at the mission statement and the IRP, and probably we'll have some questions coming out on that tomorrow. Any other input around the room here? In the Adobe Connect room? All right. We are done. Thank you very much, everybody.